Blog Talk Radio.
Radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
While some celebrities look to cash in on their fame by launching a new clothing line or endorsing various beverages, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic, there is yet another breed of celebrity who chooses to use their notoriety to make every effort possible to boost the collective self-esteem of the youth in our country. One such celebrity who fits this bill is my very special guest for the evening. He graduated magna cum laude from Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, and then went on to pick up not one, but two graduate degrees from the highly esteemed Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts, earning a JD from the highly respected Harvard Law School, as well as a master's in public administration from the Kennedy School of Government. Now, some would think that a gentleman with the academic pedigree of tonight's guest would lean towards pursuing a career where his degrees would be able to quickly and easily open the door of opportunity for himself to a high six-figure or seven-figure salary just on the value of his parchment paper credentials alone, right? Guess again. My guest this evening chose to pursue a career that is extremely challenging and typically results in far more rejection than long-term comfort. But because of his immense talent and great choice of quality roles on both television and in feature films, he has slowly but surely made a name for himself in the only industry where a former president of the Screen Actors Guild can become president of the United States and a former bodybuilder from Austria can become the governor of California. Speaking of politics, he is a good friend and former classmate of 2008 Democratic presidential nominee Barack Obama, and Senator Obama's wife, Michelle, even contributed a chapter or two to his most recent book, Letters to a Young Sister, Define Your Destiny, which is a follow-up to his New York Times best-selling book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny, which earned my guest two NAACP awards and the Best Book for Young Adults Award by the American Library Association in 2007. Who is this remarkable young man I'm speaking of who not only looks to entertain his fans, but more importantly, makes it a priority to inspire the young brothers and sisters in the urban community to achieve a better life for themselves? His name is Hill Harper, and one of the most intelligent, classy, and articulate African-American actors in the entire entertainment industry is about to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh, my God.
I got to ask you, though. Got to ask you. Do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and bury someone in a race? You do?
I think they do. I think I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them. When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect a woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo! Mode 1, this is Gerard McClendon from Chicago Tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode 1, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very exciting episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry, and today is Thursday, June 12th, and unless you've been on another planet for the last 2 to 3 weeks, you know who is on my show tonight. That's right, he is here. You've been asking for him. He is here. I think my guest should be on the line. I'm going to check right now. And if he is, we're going to get right to it. I'm not going to have a lot of fluff talk. Is this Brother Hill?
Yes, it is. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. Welcome to Upfront and Straightforward, man. I'm so glad to have you. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm fantastic. It's wonderful to be on your show. Can you hear me fine? Technically, is everything okay?
Yes, I believe it is now. Although, see, what happens, man, when I get so many callers this early in the show, it kind of jams up the line at four of those technical. Wait a minute.
Blessing. That's a blessing of abundance.
I didn't give you the applause that you deserve. Here's the applause that my boy deserves. That's right, listeners. Give it up for Hill Harper. He is in the house. Now, I'm going to ask you the toughest question right off the bat for tonight, and my clue was mentioning the NBA Finals tonight. You went to school in Massachusetts. You starred, and he got game with the Boston Celtics, Ray Allen. But now you live in La La Land where all the celebrities are loyal Lakers fans. Who are you rooting for?
You know, I'll be honest, I'm rooting for the Boston Celtics, and I'll tell you why. Number one, Ray Allen is a friend of mine from He Got Game. Number two, I have a great deal of respect for Kevin Garnett and how hard he has played this game for so many years with teams that just weren't very good, you know, and he just didn't have a supporting cast. And, you know, and Kobe Bryant is an amazing player, and perhaps will go down as the greatest player of all time when all is said and done. And I think Kobe is going to win a whole lot more rings. So I don't think that Kevin is running out of time in a sense. And so I really would love to see Boston win this series, even though I know that's sacrilege since I live in Los Angeles. But I can deal with the Laker fans and just tell them, look, you're gonna have a prosperous future, I promise you. So I'd like to see Boston win now.
Hey, you know, I'm with you, brother. You know, because I'm a big fan of Kevin Garnett as well as the other guys you mentioned, Ray Allen. He's a smooth brother, and I mean, I don't know. The Lakers, I don't hate on them, but Kobe, he has his ring. Derek Fisher, he has his ring. So I like to see the big ticket get his ring. Now, another question, man. This is important to me. This is important to me, man. Now, with all due respect to your current employer, CSI New York, love the show, and I particularly love your role on that show. But right. My brother and I, Hill, we were big fans of The Handler, dude. That, your role on The Handler was just so tight, so thorough, man. Where can I get a DVD copy of that?
You know what? I have no idea. I tell you, I'm so proud of that show, The Handler. And we did 16 episodes of it. I want to say like 13 or 14 actually aired. And that character was so in my wheelhouse. It was so fit. It fit my skill set so well that I don't know if I'll ever have the pleasure, particularly on TV for sure, but it playing a character that fits me that well. And to be honest, I was very sad to see it go because I really felt like that show was an opportunity for me to showcase what I could do. You know, it's a blessing to have beautiful employment on CSI New York, and I never will disparage being employed because there's too many people around this world who aren't employed and they're hardworking people. So I never disparage that. But let me just say that you know, I certainly don't get as much of a chance on CSI to stretch as an artist the way I did on the show The Handler. So maybe it'll get released on some kind of underground DVD or something. And I'm really proud of it.
You should be, and I echo every sentiment you just expressed. It reminds me of a show, well, not in terms of the content or anything, but I don't know, you might be too young to remember The Green Hornet and Kato. I love The Green Hornet and Kato, but it was only on for like one season.
Okay.
So you got to watch all the episodes over and over again. That's how The Handler would be for my brother and I, because like
it's a great show.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, the one thing that I do love about CSI New York, though, is playing Dr. Hawks. I get to play the most intelligent character on the show. And it's a stereotype-busting character that allows, you know, the viewer to see, oh, wow, there's a brother there that everyone else has to go to for answers, but he's not a nerd. In other words, that oftentimes they make a lot of African-American characters one-dimensional, either you're the super nerd like an Urkel, or you're the super lover like a certain character, or you are the, you know, Mandingo. You know, there's just, you fit in, or you're the athletic, you know, big bruiser guy. They're very, you know, one-dimensional, where Dr. Hawks on CSI, he's intelligent, but he's cool, and, you know, he's not overly smooth. He's just a regular super intelligent guy, which I really like, and I appreciate that.
Yes, he has his own swagger.
He has his own swagger. It's absolutely true.
For my listeners, if you read Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny, you felt my comment about the swagger because Mr. Harper here definitely.
There's a letter in there, just so the listeners know. There's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny, and the letter is entitled, it's me writing to a young brother. It's called Finding Your Swagger. And, in fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother. I wish I had it with me. It's in my office. I literally just got it yesterday from a young brother. So he read my book, and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger. Now all the girls like me like you said they would. I was so tickled by that. Yeah.
Oh, man, you got to love it. Listeners, I want to quickly tell you, I'm going to take calls in about 5 to 10 minutes. I'm be honest, I'm going to be selfish. I want to ask Hill some questions myself before I let you guys go at it. I know you're clamoring to go at it. But now you mentioned your role, and I do love your role. In general, briefly, do you think roles, quality roles for African-American actors and African-American actresses on television have improved over the years?
Well, you know, that's a difficult question to answer because in certain ways they have improved. You know, when you have a show like Grey's Anatomy, which you know, where an African-American female is the creator of the show and the showrunner, and you see, you see characters like that that are on that show, in one breath you'd say yes. But I'll tell you the way I think the industry has hurt in a real negative, stereotypical race-based fashion, is that they oftentimes studio executives don't view us and our characters as requiring artists who are actors. And you know, jokingly, some friends of mine, we jokingly say that if Sidney Poitier was starting his career today, he'd be losing roles to Puffy. And that's not to take anything away from Puffy. And I also don't take anything away from anybody who accepts a role or accepts a job. Mm-hmm. It's not the rapper's fault who accept roles, you know, because at the end of the day, if you get offered a job, you're going to accept it. You know, okay. I mean, I have no problem with that. The problem is, however, to go ahead and not let an artist who's trained in acting have an opportunity to play these great roles. So 30 years ago, it was Sidney Poitier. And then, you know, and what I love about Sean Combs, and I'll say this, is that, you know, I know him and he's serious about becoming a great actor. You know, he wants to really learn and train and do all those things. But what I think that what's interesting is that we as African American actors, since we're in many ways the industry doesn't see us as artists, we end up competing against folks from other areas of the arts. Whereas our, you know, so-called majority counterparts don't have to. You know, you don't see the young Hollywood studs. You know, you don't see Tom Cruise. Or the young Hollywood guys losing roles to the lead singer from the Goo Goo Dolls. It just doesn't happen. And so to me, it's a perception issue about what we bring to the table. I think that what the industry discounts and in many ways pigeonholes and stereotypes what we as artists, African-American artists, bring to the table. But that happens, obviously, in every other art form. You see that our greatest painters we don't command the same prices as the Van Goghs, even though we have certainly artists on the level of making historic work like Van Gogh. So it's not just in the acting area, but it happens, you know, all over the place.
Very good point, very valid point. Now, switching mediums for a second from television to film, as I mentioned to my listening audience, I first made your acquaintance when you were part of a panel sponsored by Columbia College in Chicago about black independent filmmaking. And you seem to be a particular loyal advocate of independent filmmaking. And I wanted to ask you, what types of messages and stories do you believe are readily available in many independent films that may not be conveyed effectively in some of the more high-budget studio productions?
Well, I'll answer that question by saying it kind of goes back to my original point. In independent films, oftentimes you're able to see a whole character fleshed out that's not a stereotype. So if you look at a lot of my independent films, the characters are much more complex. You know, like Loving Jezebel or Love, Sex, Eating the Bones or The Nephew. You know, these films, The Visit. These films are independent films that where Hollywood makes them much more wonder bread, where a lot of the films are independent films are much more complex. Now, the downside is though, on the unfortunate side is on the independent side is that obviously the resources aren't there, oftentimes to allow for the amount of time and the level of quality in terms of production values that you'd want to see. So people, you know, are used to seeing things of such high quality when they see a Hollywood movie, then they see an independent film, and sometimes they're not able to look past that, and that's unfortunate. But I believe in telling your own stories and all of us telling our own stories. And the beautiful thing about technology is that the barriers to entry are coming down. You know, we're at a point now where HD technology is getting so good and it just keeps improving, and you can edit your own films on your Mac computer at home and you can load them up on YouTube to find your own audience. You know, this is where the future is going, and we're not going to have to rely on other people to validate us and tell us what's worthy about putting out about ourselves. And I'm saying, and when I say ourselves, I'm not just talking about African American. I'm talking about everybody. And oftentimes when people hear an African American say us, ourselves, they think it's just, I'm just referring to black people. But I'm talking about every person, all of us, no matter who we are, where we're from, gender, ethnicity, country. We need to tell our stories, and we should, and the technology is almost there to a place where we can tell it to a mass audience at a really high quality level.
Mm-hmm. Great, great, great feedback. Now, let me ask you real quickly, and you probably said this in some other interview, but given your background, a very impressive academic background, when did you first fall in love with acting and the performing arts?
Well, it was my first semester freshman year in college. I needed a class. Actually, I played on the football team at Brown, and I needed a class to admit at a certain time. And there was a class, Theater Arts 21, Voice for the Actor, Shakespeare, taught by Professor Barbara Tannenbaum.
Wow.
And I took that class, and I immediately fell in love with the art of acting, with theater, for a few reasons. I just loved it, and I enjoyed it. I found out that I was good at it, and I also found out that all the cutest girls were in the theater program. So I thought, maybe I should hang around here more. And, you know, and all of those things have turned out to be true.
Now you mentioned you played football. Now, you know, I got to ask you, man, who's the better hooper between you and Barack?
You know what? Listen, I mean, this is you're never going to hear – anybody say that they're worse than anybody else. I mean, come on. What kind of sense would that make? Let me speak positively. I say, you know, I'm a very good athlete, and I've been a very good athlete, so let me just say that.
Okay.
But let me speak about Barack. He's outstanding. He's tall. He's got long arms. He's got a really good bank shot. He's left-handed, and he's got a good first step. He goes to the hole well, and he really uses his length well. But I'll tell you this. The way somebody plays basketball, you can just tell a lot about who they are as a person. We played a lot of basketball together at Harvard. And they're the types of people who are kind of – they're ball hogs and all those different things. And Barack, you know, he could be the best player on the court at the time, but he wants to get everybody involved. He wants the team to win. And that's really the type of person he is. You know, he hasn't changed in 20 years, and he's a great – he's going to go down, I believe, and you can – hopefully you're recording this because in 8 years you can play it back.
Okay.
If all of us do the work that we need to do to make sure he gets elected, and because this is really about work now. It's fantastic we can celebrate the nomination, but it's time to stop, celebrate, and start doing the work to push toward November 4th and getting – folks registered to vote and busting out the myths and fighting the lies that are being spread on the internet, whether it be about him or about voter registration. You know, the myth that if you are a convicted felon, you can't register to vote. You know, we have to get through those. Now, the point is, though, is if he's going to go down, I believe, as one of the greatest presidents. 8 years from now, he'll go down as one of the greatest presidents in the history of this country if we do our work and make sure he gets elected. And he'll go down with the names like Lincoln, like Roosevelt, like Kennedy. And he is an amazing, amazing man. And he truly wants to serve and help people. And he's a wonderful leader. And I have to let people know that because I've known him for 20 years, and all this rumor and fear-mongering that surrounds the internet, they're all lies. They're just not true. And you got to educate other people who believe the lies. I was just talking to somebody yesterday who was directing an episode of CSI New York, who said he met with a number of elders from the Jewish community who had received all these emails that said Barack Obama was not a friend of Israel and he would be bad for Israel, et cetera. And you know, the director has been amazed that he's had to spend so much time educating people about the truth because of how much false information is out there on the internet. And so I want to make sure everyone knows that it's all on us to register new voters, make sure they vote, and to also educate people about how wonderful of a leader Barack is going to be for this country and around the world.
Now, did you and a lot of your classmates kind of see – well, first of all, did he kind of mention this ambition back then or
– No.
No.
No, no, no. You got to understand, though, you're talking about Harvard Law School. So, I mean, you know, Harvard has produced more presidents than any – university. I think it's 9 to date. So out of what, 42? I don't know how many presidents have there been? So that's a pretty, you know, one university to produce that many, you know, a percentage of U.S. presidents. So, you know, anybody in our class you're looking around could potentially be president of the United States. But he happened to be the number one graduate from our class, you know, the top, the presumptive top graduate. Mm-hmm. He was president of Harvard Law Review, which is the top position any student can hold. He's magna cum laude. He was the top graduate. Now, you also have to remember that he was older than most of us. He took 5 years off in between undergrad and grad school, and many of us went straight. Like for me, for instance, for me, I went straight to grad school. So when he came in, I think that he was more mature. I think he had a better sense of what he wanted to do with his degree because he'd already been out working in the real world. And, you know, that's another, you know, busting through all these myths about elitism and all that stuff. You know, this is someone who turned down, when he graduated as the number one student from our class, he turned down these extremely high-paying six-figure salary job offers from law firms, Supreme Court clerkships, all these things that if you're quote-unquote on a track to wanting to be politically powerful, you would accept. Turned them all down, moved back to Chicago, and started registering voters and helping people that were laid off from the steel plants and doing civil rights law for very little money. And, you know, and that just goes to show you the type of person he was then and the type of person he is now.
Now, you must be, you mentioned Harvard. First thing I want to say about you Harvard grads, Harvard, I don't know if they just take you to a class and you guys are indoctrinated into this kind of like humility deal, but everybody I meet from Harvard is so cool and down and self-deprecating. And it's funny because, you know, I'm sure you're aware, kind of perception, at least among many, is that, oh, if you meet a Harvard grad, you know, they're going to be pretentious and arrogant. But I've yet to meet a Harvard grad who is.
Yeah, you know what? And what's interesting about that, and this is what I tell young brothers and young sisters when I talk, because they talk about, well, you went to Harvard and this, that, it's to try to create some type of difference. And the thing is that this, you know, it's no different than any other school. The difference, though, is that it has a great deal of history. So there's a sense, or, you know, what I call, you know, fear for me stands for false evidence appearing real. Mm-hmm. So there's the false evidence that, wow, if you have a Harvard degree, you're somehow must be really smart, but that's not necessarily true. You know, it doesn't matter how and where you get your education. You don't even have to have a formal degree, in my opinion. You could. There's more information on the internet than there is in the largest library at Harvard. So the point is, if you're diligent and disciplined, you can educate yourself in a variety of ways. The challenge is, you know, the one thing that going to Harvard does do, and I'll say this, is that it allows you to compete with very driven, very intelligent people, so you can basically improve your game. You know, it's like, you know, Kobe Bryant, when he plays and practices, he wants to play, he says this all the time, he wants to play and practice against the best so his game improves. And that's obviously what happens at Harvard Law School, at least. You know, you're debating and you're being challenged by people who are very intelligent and very driven and very disciplined. So that's a wonderful opportunity. And some people take advantage of it and others don't.
Now, you must be a master at time management, because it's impressive enough to pick up a JD from Harvard, but you pick up a JD and a Master's of Public Administration. Dude, when you gonna write letters to Alan Roger Curry, please master time management?
Well, I'll tell you, Alan. You know what's interesting? You say that is that. Listen, I tell you, I'm working harder now than I ever did at Harvard. That's for sure. You know, to be able to be on CSI New York and also write these books. But the whole idea is, it's not about writing the books. It's about traveling the country, meeting with young people, and helping them. You know, and you can go to my found and starting my nonprofit, the Manifest Your Destiny Foundation, where we're going to give away scholarships now, free mentoring, all these things, you know, that it requires resources and sweat equity. And I'm willing to put it in because this is important. We're in a crisis mode right now with our young people. I mean, we don't talk about it enough, but we are in crisis mode. Our number one killer of our young African-American women ages 16 to 34 is HIV and AIDS. Our young men in most major cities have a below 50% graduation rate from high school across the country in most public school systems, urban public school systems. You know, what's happening to these young men? We're seeing incarceration rates double and triple. You know, it's just, we are in crisis mode, and I have to, in some ways, look at myself in the mirror, because I'm going to make a big statement right now. I believe that the industry I'm in, the entertainment industry and all related media, meaning advertisers, et cetera, my industry has done more to decimate the self-esteem and self-worth of our young people than any other industry.
Wow.
And I had to step up to the plate and create these books to fight against that. And because I believe the number one thing we're fighting right now with our young people is the self-esteem, self-worth piece.
Exactly. Now, again, I think it goes without saying, at least for me, that you know that you definitely have your priorities in place. But being in the industry you are, it seems, especially nowadays, it almost seems to be inevitable that you're going to read about in the Star, the Inquirer, somebody either having some, getting drunk at somebody's party in the Hollywood Hills or having a hissy fit on a movie set. I've never read anything disparaging about you. You seem to know how to stay under the radar but still be prominent in your own way. What keeps you grounded? What keeps you focused? And what keeps you basically out of trouble?
Wow. There's a number of answers to that. I got to answer the first one. The first and main thing is God's favor. I've been very blessed and very fortunate. And, you know, because, listen, just like anyone, there are times in our lives where we make mistakes. And I make plenty of them. You know, there's been times, and so at the end of the day, I enjoy red wine, and I've gone out to dinner with my friends and end up maybe drinking a little bit more red wine than I should. And then, oh, do I take a cab? No, I convince myself I can drive home. So let's say I could have been pulled over quite easily at times when I made that mistake. If I make that, I don't make that mistake anymore, but that was when in my youth. You know, now I just take a cab. It's not worth it. I have enough discipline and understanding to be like, you know, I'll get my car some other time. Because drinking and driving is wrong, and you shouldn't do it, and you put other people's lives in jeopardy. But listen, I'm not going to sit up here and say that I've never done it, because I have. And so to act as if I'm perfect and been able to avoid trouble, it just would be wrong. And that's what I talk about in my book. You know, I think that the reason why a lot of young people respond to my book is because I don't try to give them spin. I don't try to give them the best version of Hill Harper. I have messed up before many times, and I'm flawed, but I do my best. But God has looked favorably upon me because I feel very blessed and fortunate that I have avoided that, you know, in many ways. And now it's my responsibility to do my best to continue to be a role model, because we all are role models. I don't care if you're on TV or not. You're a role model to the young people that see you even who don't even know who you are, and you're walking through the grocery store. The way you act, the way you conduct yourself, they're modeling your behavior. They watch. They look to you. And that's critical.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Well, here, what we're going to do at this time is I got a number of calls, and I'm not going to be able to get to all of them, but I like to have my show at least a little bit interactive, so
let's
I'm going to take a few calls.
Let's hear from folks. Yeah.
Now, listeners, I got to warn you, get to the point. If I open up your line, don't engage in any long-winded, small talk, fluff talk. Get right to your question or comment. I'm going to start with area code 651. Area code 651, what is your question or comment for Mr. Hill Harper?
My name is Leslie, and I was calling to say that I really admire your work. But my question is that I work with children, and I help them do, you know, writing, and I teach elementary school. And I'm wondering, how do you find your voice as a writer? And as busy as you are as an actor, how do you find time to do your research?
That's a great question. Oftentimes what I found in terms of writing is that you set aside time, you know, on a regular basis to write but you never force it. But always keep either a recorder, piece of paper around you all the time, because sometimes ideas and thoughts hit you. So I'll get a small idea, it'll hit me, and I'll record it. I use my BlackBerry as a memo-keeping device as well. I'll make a memo for myself, or I'll read an article, and I'll tear that out of the newspaper. All these different techniques, there's inspiration is everywhere, and you can find it everywhere. And that's what I love. Now, on the actual writing side, I oftentimes write out ideas or longhand or do different things, and I use different things. Sometimes I'll literally think about something and come up with different ideas around a certain topic and write, but I try not to ever censor myself. I don't like the word try. I don't like using that word, so I'm sorry. Every time I use that word, I catch myself and apologize. there's no such thing as the word try. You're either doing or you're not doing. And it's because I know too many people, for instance, in Hollywood that are trying to write a script and they're trying to do that and they're trying to do that. So I do my best not to use that word. But at the end of the day, never censor, because you can always edit. And I think that most people censor themselves way too early and quickly in the writing process. It doesn't have to be right. One of my favorite poems in the world is by a great New England poet named Mary Oliver, who's won, I believe, Pulitzer Prize, all sorts of things. And she has a poem called Wild Geese. And it starts like this. The first line, you do not have to be good. Just think about a poet writing that. You know, how much self-compassion that is. All of us need to be much more self-compassionate and say, you know what, I don't have to be good and great. I just have to keep creating, and then over time I can edit it and make it better. And that's the same thing about our life. We continue this journey. We don't have to be perfect. We just keep living, doing the best we can, and over time we can edit it and make it better. So the poem goes, you do not have to be good. You don't have to walk on your hands and knees for 100 miles repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. And I love that line, too. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. And if more of us stay focused on doing that, and even in the writing process, write what you love. Write what attracts you, and then edit it. And that's a way to really approach the writing process.
Well, thank you so much. That was really inspirational.
Absolutely. And know you can create. Write it and create it. And people will respond. So make sure you keep writing. Don't let anyone discourage you from doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you, area code 651 for calling. 651 for calling. Got to warn my listeners that, as you can probably anticipate, Mr. Harper here is a very busy man. So we only got so many minutes. I'm not going to put a number on it, but basically whenever he's ready to go, I'm going to let him go. So I'm not going to be able to take all of the calls I see in my queue, because I see quite a few, but I'm going to try to get as many as I can while Mr. Harper is still here. Next, I'm going to go with area code 770-770. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my special guest, Mr. Hill Harper. What's your question or comment?
Hi, Hill.
Yes.
I was calling out because you and I spoke when you came to Atlanta, and you said it was going to open up an office down here for Obama's campaign.
Well, I'm personally not going to open, but Georgia is a state where we're placing a high priority. We believe that we can put that state into play for us in terms of the campaign or redrawing the map, the Electoral College map. From the 2004 election. So there's definitely going to be an office opening. There's definitely going to be a team coming down to do some organizing in Georgia. I know it's not open yet, but know that it's coming. But, you know, what I tell people, go ahead with your question. I'm jumping the gun. Go. What were you going
to
say?
I was just trying to find out the time frame that there would be down here, because I wanted to be part of it. That's what we talked about, and I emailed you.
Well, all of that stuff is coming together as we speak, and I don't know the exact timing of who and how they're going to roll out each particular state at this point. But what I must say is this, is that all of us can think of ourselves as our own mini campaign managers, though. You don't have to wait for the official Obama campaign office to open in Atlanta. You can begin doing the work, because it's very simple. You know, it's not a complicated process into what we need to happen. We need new voters registered, and we need to make sure that those voters come out and vote. You know, to win a state, to change the outcome of a particular state where the Democrats did not win before and haven't won since, I believe, Jimmy Carter, you know, we need, obviously, new voters to vote. You know, that's how you win, is new voters to vote. And so, you know, if you as an American citizen can register voters.
Okay.
You don't have to wait for the Obama office to register. You can register new voters for November 4th in Georgia. You can bust through the myths about, you know, men that have been in prison that they can't register, all of that stuff. You can register voters. And then keep a list of who you register so we can do follow-up, and you can do follow-up to make sure that they actually vote on November 4th, because I don't want the same mistakes to happen that happened with Rock the Vote and Vote or Die. If you remember Puffy's Vote or Die thing and you remember Rock the Vote, the problem with Rock the Vote and Vote or Die is that they did a great job registering voters. You know, you could, they'd have concerts, and if you bring your voter registration stuff, you got to go to the concert for free. So they did a great job registering new voters. The problem is many of those people didn't actually vote. If they would have actually voted in 04, we wouldn't have been subjected to four more years of this Bush tragedy that we've seen. So there was not a follow-through. So make sure whoever you register, you keep their information and be your own campaign manager. And make sure you're calling them leading up to November 4th, and I'm making sure you vote. And even on November 4th, you know, I have keep lists of people. And folks are shocked to hear from me. They're like, is this really Hill Harbor? I say, yeah. Are you voting? I need you to vote. Wow, I didn't believe you'd call. And it's kind of impresses upon them. It doesn't have to be Hill Harper calling. Just if someone you meet, you know, this month, and you call them in early November and remind them to vote, they're going to be extremely impressed, and they're going to say, wow, this person is taking this very seriously. Maybe I should too. And I'm proud of you for even asking the question, but be your own campaign manager. We need you.
Because, see, what happened is I was wondering whether or not I needed forms or anything like that to be able to register these individuals.
Yes, no. You go to your county voter registrar's office, and you can pick up as many voter reg forms as you want, and they give you the exact thing. They have to be filled out in specific ways. You got to understand. You need to – every state is different, and it has to be filled out in specific ways, and so make sure you follow the exact rules of how you fill them out for someone, and you get it done. But go out and register people. I carry them around when I'm walking around in malls, all sorts of things.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Area code 770. I'm going to go to area code 219. Area code 219. You're up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, my special guest, Mr. Hill Harper. What's your question or comment?
Hill Harper. Alan Roger Curry, welcome to the show. Hey, thank you so much for all of your television work, Mr. Harper. You know, your wisdom that you're sharing tonight is unbelievable. I want to share with you my two favorite performances from you were from Get on the Bus.
Yes, yes.
And the ultimate performance was from A Good Man is Hard to Find.
With oh, wow.
Brother, my wife and I were so mad at you. You were so convincing in that film, and I encourage people to run out and purchase or rent that film. That film was a cold black. I'm telling you, man, that was unbelievable. Keep up the good work, and thank you so much, Mr. Harper, for proving that excellent brothers that are intelligent do exist in this world, and stay loud, stay proud. Do what you do, my brother. I love you both.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. You know, he's talking about A Good Man's Hard Fine, which recently just came out on DVD, and I very rarely get to play the bad guy. You know, I guess I don't come off as the most intimidating of men, I guess, or something. You know, I'm just perceived as being such a nice guy. So as an actor, I love it when I get to play the bad guy and get to play the bad guy. I want to play the bad guy more, but in A Good Man, it's hard to find. I play the snake in the snakey in the grass.
Oh, yeah. Now, brother, I saw that role, and you were, like you said, you were very – yeah, that's the first time I've seen you play a character like that. But the character – I mentioned it on a couple shows ago, my show. Man, your role in Love, Sex, and Eating the Bones? Bruh! Boy, I watched that movie like about 10 times.
And that's funny. That's one of my favorite films. And that's a prime example of what we talked about at the beginning, you know, playing a character that Hollywood studio would never, you know, allow that character to be played and portrayed in a way, you know. I mean, there's so much complexity to that character, which I love. But I'm going to be honest. I'll tell you what my favorite role is to date that I've played on film, okay, in terms of the quality of the work and the meaning of it for me personally as an artist. And that's a film I did called The Visit.
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, a lot of people in my chat room have been asking about The Visit.
Well, The Visit is something, you know, it's based on a true story, and I played a man who was dying in prison of AIDS. And I actually put his real obituary was hanging above my door in my trailer. So I would see him every day as I walked, a picture of him with the obituary as I walked to the set. And I truly believe he was with me on this film. His spirit was there with me as I did the movie, and you know, we shot in a real jail, and I could feel his presence because he never got out, you know. And the whole idea of the film and the whole idea of what he was attempting to do was to get the parole board to release him so he could actually visit with his family, and make amends with his father. And it means a lot. That film meant a lot to me. It's the last film that my father actually got to see before he passed away.
Oh, wow.
He came to a screening of it. By the time it even came out, my father had actually passed. And so that film means a great deal. I mean, Billy Dee Williams plays my father. In the film, he reminds me of my father. You know, so it's a powerful film. I'm proud of that film. And if you haven't seen it, please check out The Visit. I do believe if it was a studio or an Oscar film that, you know, I believe a lot of the actors in it, including Billy Dee Williams, would have gotten nominated for an Oscar. But, you know.
Now, somebody asked in the chat room, will that ever be converted into a stage production?
It was a stage production.
Oh, it was a stage.
It's
okay.
Funny. They're very smart. It was a stage production first, and then the writer-director optioned the stage play to make the film. So it is a play, and I think that they put it up in L.A. They re-put it up in L.A. at some point recently. But it is a play.
Now, has there ever been a role, and this might be a dumb question for an actor because I'm sure this happens all the time, but was there a juicy role that you wanted or even auditioned for that it still stings to this day that you didn't
get? Oh. Are you kidding me? There are so many. There are so many roles that hurt to this day. You know, I could tell you story after story after story, but from early on in my career, I was on Married with Children. That's the first real job I booked, and I was like a recurring character working in the shoe store with Al.
Mm-hmm.
And a movie that came up called Blue, it was a Miramax film with William Hurt and Harvey Keitel and Forest Whitaker, and I really felt that that was a great stepping stone for me. And they said that I had a screen test with William Hurt in New York, but it was going to conflict with one of the taping days, the taping day in front of the audience of Married with Children. So I went to the producers of Married with Children, and I said to them, you know what, can I get this episode off to go test for this movie? And they told me, if you walk out that door and go test for that movie, you'll never come back here to Married with Children. And I said, okay, and I did what I usually did. I stepped out on faith and walked out. And because I was like, you know what, am I going to be scared and take what I have, or am I going to go for doing quality work and something like Blue? And I went out there, and, man, I didn't get the role because I was convinced, I was blowing off this set job I was so depressed and hurt and upset, but I realized that having the courage to walk away from something is just as valuable as don't be attached to the result. And it's a high level to get to, and I'm not there yet. I'll be honest, because I mean, just recently there's a film that Will Smith is doing. The script is incredible. In fact, I'm telling you right now, He will most likely win an Oscar based on how good the script is, and the movie is one. It's probably one of the best scripts I've ever read. Period. The script is called 7 Pounds.
7 Pounds.
And 7 Pounds. And there was a role to play his brother that I went in and I read for, and I didn't get it. I wanted it so bad because I believe this film is going to go down in history. If the filmmakers and all the pieces come together and the film is as good as the script, it'll go down in history as one of the greatest movies in the last 10 years.
Wow.
And Will Smith should win an Oscar because the role is that incredible. Because you got to remember, it's the roles that make award-winning performances. It's not necessarily the actor all the time. You got to understand that the givens of the roles, you can read a script and realize, wow, all the different things and the emotions that this character gets to play, if it's in the hands of a good, solid actor, then they should be able to win a little something, you know. But I wanted to be part of that film very badly. Michael Ealy got the role, and Michael Ealy's a friend of mine, and he's a good, solid actor. And I'm
from
proud of him. And,
on Showtime.
Yeah, yeah. He was the lead of Sleeper Cell. Exactly.
Yeah,
he was in Barbershop. Good brother.
Okay. Now, somebody asked from the chat room wanted me to ask you. Now, you mentioned that you at Brown, you took an acting class, but someone wanted to know, from the time you graduated from Harvard, what was your kind of first foray into acting?
Well, as soon as I graduated from Harvard, I mean, during Harvard, I would go down to New York and audition, and I was doing all sorts of things, you know, plays and theater all through college. I mean, through grad school at Harvard. So I was acting during that time, and I made the decision I was going to act full-time as soon as I graduated. So as soon as I graduated, I packed up and I moved. I had some connections in L.A., friends that were moving there, and I could crash their house. I moved to L.A. I started waiting tables from 11 at night to 7 in the morning. Come home smelling like hamburgers and grease and take a shower. And at 8 o'clock, I'd go to bed, and I'd sleep from 8 to 1. And then from 1 till about 6, I'd try to get auditions and try to get roles and take some acting classes. And then I'd go take a nap and go back to work by 11. And that lasted all the way up until I booked that first gig on Married with Children, you know, because it gave me some regular income. So there was no lag time. You know, it was immediate. By the time I graduated, I already decided that I was going to act full time.
Now, you bring up the interesting point, because I actually pursued an acting career for a while. And one of the things I was always told, and I'm sure all aspiring actors and actresses are told, is that, well, you should have a backup, you know, such as a college degree or another career path. And I was reading an interesting story where you talked about your Uncle Frank basically thought, you know, you were pursuing a career in an industry that was very shaky, very uncertain, very risky, and he wanted you to go towards a more conventional career, and you did not take his advice. You stuck to your guns. And I guess the question I want to ask you, where is that fine line between saying, I'm going to pursue my dream? There's a quote I love in the movie Flashdance where I think the character actor Michael Nouri, he tells Jennifer Beals, when you give up your dream, you die. And that stuck with me. But then there are some people, I mean, let's just be real, there are some people who pursue creative careers that just flat out probably don't have the talent that's going to take them to where they want to go. So how do you know when to say, okay, I'm going to just stick to it until the day I die versus, okay, I pursued this long enough, let me see what else works?
Okay. That's a really complex question, but I want to break it down. Here's the deal. First of all, I don't believe in backup stuff, because as soon as you start saying that, as soon as you start articulating that, then you're already putting in failure, the idea or the seed of failure. So you don't go and get graduate degrees for backup. You go because it improves you as a person and also improves your ability to be a critical thinker and all of those different things, okay? So it's not for a plan B. But here's the deal. You follow your heart is what you do. You follow your passion always, and you're always committed to that. And what I would say to you about many people who ultimately – and again, I want to say something else. It's not about talent either. You got to remember, it's not about so-called talent, because there's some, you know, there's people I know that are super talented that don't work in this business, and there's other people I know that aren't necessarily super talented that do work. And there's a lot of different things that come into play. So it's not just about talent or no talent. So beyond that, though, you follow your heart at all times and in all ways, because what ends up happening when you do is that you're led down a path that may take you to a place where you didn't even know you were supposed to go, if that makes any kind of sense. I'll use a quick example.
Oh, that makes total sense.
I used to think when I was young that I was going to be a professional football player. I was good at football. I was all city and all these things, scored touchdowns, thought I was going to get a scholarship to a big Pac-10 school, and I thought I was going to be a pro football player. So I was passionate about that, and I followed my passion. Now, someone could have sat back and said to me, when I was in high school, could have sat down and said, look at the facts. You're not that big, right? You're not that big of a guy. You're fast, but you're not blindingly fast. What makes you believe that you could play professional football? But no one said, I was always told I could do anything I wanted in life. But catch this. What happens? I do pretty well academically in my public high school. I'm a good football player. I get a recruiting letter from Brown University because they have trouble finding put people that can play football that can also meet the academical requirements for admission. Mm-hmm. So this is a great school. Decide to go to Brown. My first semester, now remember, I go to Brown in part because I'm following my passion. Oh, I'm going to play football at Brown as well. Great. It's not as competitive as Pac-10 school, so I'll get the chance to play right away, all this stuff. I go, but what happens? I get introduced to theater because I went to Brown. Now, you think I would have found theater if I would have gone to some big Pac-10 football school, right? No. But the reason why I followed my passion, because of football, I found theater, which became my purpose. But at the same time, I got introduced to politics and political issues and all sorts of things. And so if you follow your and so my new passion, my old passion got replaced with a new passion. So I would suggest to you, and this is a long-winded answer, so I apologize.
Oh, hey, be long-winded here, man.
The question you gave was very complex. So I would suggest to you that many of the people that are running into roadblocks in terms of their so-called dream or passion, they may have become so blinded and devoted to it because they've articulated it for so long, perhaps they're not opening themselves up to the real reason they were led down that path in the first place, which could be something totally different. In other words, some people I know said they were going to be actors, and that's what they were passionate about. They followed it. But perhaps the only reason why they became actors was actually to meet their future wife or husband in the acting class. But as soon as they did that, their purpose for doing that was over, and now they got a new passion, and now they're doing something completely different. But if they never would have followed their heart to become that or this, they never would have met that person, if that makes sense to you.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Don't judge your passion. Follow your heart and trust and have faith that you're being led down that path for a reason. But don't be so myopic that if new inputs come in, new information, new situations, new things come in, you don't have to just out of ego and pride hold on to what you first set out to do. You can change it up. Does that make sense?
Oh, man, you just dropped a lot. The chat rooms, I wish you could see the chat room. They said this brother has dropped it so much. Because matter of fact, you worried about being long-winded. Actually, about 15 minutes ago, I was going to do, I usually do like a 2-3 minute intermission. But you've been in such a flow, my brother, that I don't want to interrupt you.
We got a master class going on today.
Now, another question that came from the chat room. And again, this is going to be a question that's common towards actors about roles. For example, Terrence Howard, he said he struggled initially with the idea of playing the role of the pimp in Hustle and Flow.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he ended up accepting it, got nominated for an Oscar, and that opened the door for a lot of other movies that mm-hmm. he's done quality roles. Somebody asked from the chat room, are there some roles that you've just struggled with because you felt like they would say were stereotypical or you just didn't feel like they were just good roles?
That's a great question. The way I look at it, I don't look at it by the role. That's a mistake. The way I look at it is by the project and what the message of the overall project is. Okay? I'm an actor, so I want to play different roles. I'd love to play the bad guy and all these different things. But it's the message of the overall project. I'll give you a quick example. I did a movie called In Too Deep where I played a drug dealer.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, now in that film, I play a drug dealer. I work for LL Cool J, who's also a drug dealer, mm-hmm. right? Omar Epps is the guy undercover, and Nia Long's in the film. Now, in reading the script, you can see this. You read the script. Unfortunately, I played that role and did it, And this, now I'm reading the script. If the movie would have ended with LL Cool J and I, like a lot of our work and music videos are this and irresponsible and denigrating to us. If the movie would have ended with LL Cool J and I in a hot tub with Cristal saying dealing drugs is good, I wouldn't have done it because that would have been the ending message of the project. Understand?
Exactly.
But instead, the movie ended with he and I getting. It's a very simplistic message. I'm not trying to say it's some deep movie, but the point is that it ends with he and I having consequences of doing our negative acts in the community, and the guy that was doing the right thing gets the girl, Nia Long, he gets the prize, which is a pretty good prize, and he rides off into the sunset. And so that point, the overarching message of that movie is that if you're a drug dealer, it's wrong, it's hurtful, and the good guys are the ones that have the good result. But but there's a lot of irresponsible work out there which puts out the opposite message. And if I told you some of the roles that I've turned down over the course of my career because of the projects and the message of the project and how it denigrates us, you'd be amazed. And the point is, I'd be much more famous and much more wealthy if I would have done many of those roles. And I won't tell you what they are, and the reason why is because I don't judge people for taking a role. I don't know what someone's situation is. They could have kids that are sick, you know, leukemia, diabetes. They could have somebody they need to send to college. So you can take a role for a whole lot of reasons, you know. So I don't judge anybody for taking work, you know what I'm saying. So, but I can only look at myself in the mirror and know what I reject and accept, and I do it based on the project. Lackawanna Blues, for instance, you can play the good guy or the bad guy in Lackawanna Blues. The overarching message of that movie is so incredible and uplifting for our people, it doesn't matter if you're the bad guy or the good guy. So it's not about the role, it's about the project.
Yeah, that was an excellent, excellent piece. Listeners, if you have Lackawanna Blues, oh, man, you don't know what you're missing. Great, great, great piece. Yeah, that's a good point you make, because my brother Steven and I, we talk about how a lot of brothers in the hood, for lack of a better way of generalizing, they love Scarface, and they think Scarface is a hero, but I think they missed reality. At the end, he gets shot half up. And I know your co-star in He Got Game, Denzel Washington, said when he played certain roles like what he played in Alonzo in Training Day, he would write on script, The Wages of Sin or Death. So that's a very good point to make about storylines and about the emphasis of the project as opposed to the role. Well, I'm going to go back to the phone for at least a couple of callers because, again, I got 200 calls waiting. I see Eric Cole.
I'm going to have to jump off soon.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going
to
say.
But no, we can take a couple more. I'm just telling you, I have yesterday was the last shooting day for this season of CSI New York, and it's the rap event. So I don't want to be disrespectful to the crew. It's the cast and crew, and a lot of them bring their families. They like to take pictures and whatnot.
Gotcha.
And so I don't want to be disrespectful to them, and particularly ones that bring their kids out. So they're having it at a bowling alley. It's a really nice family type event. So I'm going to have to get to that. But we can take a couple more.
Okay,
I'm going to
take two more calls, and then
we can take a couple back-to-back-to-back-to-back, and we can just try to answer them all at once type of thing.
Okay, area code 317, you're up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest, Hill Harper. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, Hill Harper, I just want to say I really admire you, and Mo One, Alan Curry, just great job. That's all I wanted to say.
Appreciate that.
Oh, thank you, man. I really appreciate you. And you know what? Let me just say this real quick. I love a call like that because it's important that all of us lift each other up all the time. And oftentimes in our community, folks always, you know, if you go on the internet sometimes you see folks talking bad about this and bad about that, but it's nice just to lift up. And I'm going to lift him up and say, brother, just it shows your dignity to be able to just make that call, to call in and lift some brothers up. And so I appreciate you.
Yeah, that wasn't nice. It was to the point, you know, didn't take up a lot of time. Aaron Cole, 260, what's your question or comment for Mr. Hill Harper?
Hey, Alan and Hill, this is Cafe. My question is, being in show business, how are you able to differentiate between those who want to get to know Hill Harper the man versus Hill Harper the entertainer or the celebrity?
Okay, I'm trying to understand that question. Would you repeat it? Repeat the question?
How, being a celebrity, how
yes.
are you able to meet new people and meet people that genuinely want to get to know you as a person versus just trying to get to know you because you're this huge actor and you might do this and
you
that?
You know what? I never think of it that way, to be honest. I guess I just try to use, you know, I said try again. I'm sorry. What I do is I use my intuition. Okay, you know, one of my favorite lines from Common is he says, it doesn't take all day to recognize sunshine. You know, I think most of us have God-given intuition, and we literally, you can get a sense. Now, some people are really good and can fake you out, but for the most part, most of us can tell the difference really within the first 30 seconds of meeting somebody if they're genuine versus if they're not. And so I just use the intuition. The tough thing, though, is, to be honest, when you talk about actually meeting new people, it's the travel. It's not the celebrity.
Okay.
It's the travel. You know, I'm on the road, running around so much that even if you meet great new people, you're never in the same place very long to be able to spend enough time to actually build those relationships. I mean, I don't even spend enough time with my old friends, let alone new friends, if that makes any kind of sense.
Okay, it does. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, 269. This is the last call. I'm going to take one more call. This is the final call. I apologize to all the other calls waiting. I got area code 773, area code 773. You're now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my special guest, Mr. Hill Harper. What's your question or comment?
Oh, my gosh, I don't have a question, and I had asked you to pass me in the chat room, but I just want to say to Hill, I'm just loving hearing you today and all the knowledge and information that you're dropping in. Again, for Alan, Roger, this is your show. This is a great show, and thank you for bringing them on. And cut me off now, please.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, listen, let's take another two, because you have, I tell you, your quality of listeners are clearly, they're intelligent and they're very, very gracious. So, you know, we can take two more. If there are folks waiting, we could take a couple more.
Okay,
they must
okay,
they have been
take
on hold
a
while.
Then. Now, Hill, I've been telling my friends I owe you an apology because, see, we took a picture when you were in Chicago, fall 2005,
right.
And I joked with you. I said, you know, once you take this picture with me, you know this means we tight. So there's going to be women probably over the next few months, years, and walking up to you saying, now, did you and Alan play hoops a lot? He said you guys play hoops and you guys eat chicken wings and hook up. So I just told a whole bunch of lies, man. I'm saying on there, I apologize, man. But
hey,
I told
man.
Everybody you and I were just like super tight, man. You consult me when you're about to looking at a script that you call me and say, Alan, man, what do you think? So I'm just letting
That's
you know
funny.
That. Erico 614. You are now up front and straightforward, Alan Roger Curry and my boy Hill Harper. What's your question or comment?
Hello, Alan. Hello, Mr. Harper. I just want to thank you again for all the excellent comments that you've made. Very intelligent, very articulate, and I'm like, wow. But my question to you is, I heard you say, you know, you don't focus on failure, but I wonder if you have a certain focus process, you know, a vision board, a vision book, anything like that, and if you do, can you help elaborate on how you achieve your goals?
Okay, that's a great question. I'd like to break it down this way. I believe, and I talk about it in my first book, Letters to Young Brother, but I don't really explain all of it. This is a concept of being an active architect of your own life. That's what I call it. We can be active architects of our own life. And if you think about the process an architect goes to create or manifest their dream, their goal, which would be their structure, we can approach our life in the exact same way, meaning we can first start by blueprinting. So we sketch out the blueprint of the way we want our life to look, and we use pencil and paper because as we get new inputs and information, our blueprint or our design may change. And then the next step would be we lay a foundation, and the foundational elements are all the education and training and resource tools we need to achieve whatever our stated goal or dream is. And I believe that the size and thickness of your foundation is linked to the size and thickness of your dream. If you have big dreams, you need a big foundation. If your dreams are too big and your foundation is thin, it will implode. So, you know, you educate yourself, you train. Other things that are foundational elements are money. You know, these are resource tools. Many people think about money as a result, but money is just a resource tool, just like education, just like training. Other things that are foundational, faith. You need to build your faith and strengthen belief. All of those things. And there are all other foundational things. Your people you surround yourself with, those are foundational elements. And so there's your foundation. The next step is the framework of the structure of your life. And the framework of the choices that we make. And you have to, the choices are sometimes the most important. You could have built, have the greatest blueprint, perfect foundation, make poor choices, and you may never get there. Good example is Ken Lay, who ran Enron, who is now deceased, or Michael Vick. You know, Michael Vick had a great foundation. He had great blueprint. He was definitely on the right track for achieving his goal of being in the Hall of Fame, but he made some poor choices, so that has derailed that. Now, that doesn't mean Mike Vick can't come back and be incredible, but it's still there's choices that he made that I think that if he had a choice to redo them, he would make a different choice. Now, the last step are the doors to a structure to me, and that the door piece is welcoming new people into your life that can help you get there. Even Tiger Woods has a coach. So remember, we all need help no matter how great we are in anything. The other thing that doors do is they let people out. Many of us have toxic people in our lives that we need to let out of those doors. And when we know we can't get there, deep down we have an intuitive knowledge that we can't get there if we keep these people in our lives. They could be so-called friends, they could be associates, they could be family, all sorts of different things. So know that those are the steps for me, and so please create your blueprint, build your foundation, make the best choices you can, and then welcome people into your lives to help you get there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. Building a foundation, building your house. Your life is your house.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you.
I'm proud of you, and just continue. And vision boards are great, too. Mm-hmm. Vision boards are part of that faith piece, that foundational piece. You understand? You could see it, and you know it, and you believe it, and it's going to manifest. You can create it. I don't know. Have you gotten either one of my books, Letters to a Young Brother or Letters to a Young Sister?
I have not, no.
Well, pick them up, and I think you'll enjoy both. They're very different. Letters to a Young Sister, Define Your Destiny, just came out last week. I'm very proud. Just heard that it hit number 5 on the New York Times bestsellers.
Oh, wow, congratulations.
So, really proud of that. So thank you to anybody out there that bought it in its first week in release, because my goal really was to have it hit the bestsellers list because I wanted to prove to the publishing industry that positive motivational books for our young people work and are important. And then Letters to Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny, has been out. And so please pick up that book. I think you'll enjoy both of them. But, you know, grab the new one, Letters to a Young Sister, Define Your Destiny. And if you get a chance, grab the paperback of Letters to a Young Brother. And one way you can see it is my foundation has a website. My nonprofit is www.manifestyourdestiny.org. www.manifestyourdestiny.org. You can also go and you can order the book through there. It'll send you to Amazon.com or BarnesandNobles.com. And then also it gives my tour dates. So I'll be all over the country the next couple weeks, and if folks want to come out and say hello, just like the woman from Atlanta. I was in Atlanta last week, and I'll be all over the country next week, in the next few weeks. So come out and please say hello, get your book signed, and thank you for supporting this book, and gift the book to young people. You know, this book has to be a gifted book. I'm under no naive delusion. The young people aren't wandering the streets. I mean, wandering the stacks of Borders and Barnes and Noble, saying, "I can't wait for the next hardcover to drop." You know, we need to absolutely gift the book.
Well, I'm definitely going to get the book, and that's at Barnes and Noble or Amazon.
At BarnesandNobles.com, Amazon.com, or you can go to my website, www.manifestyourdestiny.org, or you can get it to your local bookseller. I mean, I love supporting the local African-American booksellers that are in. If there's one in your city, go get it from them, because they're small business, and they deserve our support. But there's not a bookstore like that in every community.
Yeah, we have one in ours. Thank you.
Oh, fantastic.
So
well, go there. Go there and get it.
Yes, sir.
Fantastic.
Well, listeners, I know Mr. Hill has Mr. Harper has other obligations to go to, so I'm going to wrap it up right now. Brother, I just want to say I more than appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to participate in my show.
Absolutely.
It really means
thank
a lot
you so much. And listen, this, you know, you are the voice of the people, and so it's important that you're allowing everyone's voices to be heard and your listeners to call in. So thank you for what you're doing, and continue, and God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you, Hill. Hill Harper, folks. That was Hill Harper. He was my special guest this evening, and everybody enjoyed him, and I know I sure did because he was dropping just so much knowledge on my listening audience. Just give it up for this brother, Hill Harper. You can catch him every Wednesday as the role in the role of Dr. Sheldon Hawks. Dr. Sheldon Hawks on the CBS drama CSI New York. And go to IMDb, and you can check out all the roles he played. If you're not familiar with the roles, like The Visit, Lackawanna Blues. Now, I just want to tell you, I started off before I brought here on the line that I was going to give away up to 3 books. But you're going to have to work for it. You're going to have to work for it. I'm not just going to give you the book. You're going to have to work for it. So here's what I want you to do. Write this email address down, Hill Harper Books. Hill Harper Books as one word. Hill Harper Books at mode1.net, MODEONE.net. Write me a little essay. It could be like 2-3 sentences. Why you should have this book for your daughter, your niece, your younger sister, or your Aunt Melba in Wisconsin. Write me a little note. Let me know why you should get the book. And if I like it, the 3 best, I'm sending the book. And then at least one other book I'm going to give, if you go to one of these three book signings, and you send me a copy, photocopy of your receipt of the book, and you show me where Hill, my guest for the night, has signed your book. June 14th, he's going to be signing books in Los Angeles at the Isowan Bookstore. I don't know if I pronounced it right, but the Isowan Bookstore. That's 3655 South La Brea Avenue in Los Angeles. That's June 14th at 2 o'clock. June 14th at 2 o'clock. June 18th, he's going to be in Baltimore. I know I got a lot of Baltimore listeners. He's going to be at the Enoch Pratt Public Library. That's 400 Cathedral Street. That's on June 18th at 7 o'clock p.m. June 19th, Philadelphia, 7 o'clock p.m., the Free Library of Philadelphia. That's 1901 Vine Street in Philadelphia. And finally, he's got a few more, but the last one I'm going to mention is June 20th in my neck of the woods, Chicago in Hyde Park Borders, 7 o'clock p.m., 1539 East 53rd Street. The way you can get a book from me by going to this book signing is you will buy the book first, get it signed by Hill, send me a photocopy of the receipt and or a picture of you holding the book with his signature, and then I will reimburse you for the price of that book. I will reimburse you for the price of that book, and I just want everybody in those 4 cities I mentioned to come out and support Hill. I have both books. They're great books. They're not fluff. Some people think that they might have a lot of, you know, fluffy, as some blog talk radio hosts say, chicken soup for the soul stuff. No, Hill breaks it down. Hill breaks it down in both Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny, and Letters to a Young Sister, Define Your Destiny. So make sure you pick up that book. But like I said, I will give away up to 3 books if you write me a note and let me know why your sister, daughter, niece, whoever should have that book. And I really appreciate everyone joining me tonight. I was just really overwhelmed by this guy's presence here. I love some Hill Harper. I think he's just an overall quality guy, very intelligent, very classy, as you heard him. And I apologize to my listeners for early on at the beginning of the show with all the technical difficulties that I had, but everybody hung with me. They were patient. I appreciate that. I love all my listeners. I love all the people in the chat room. I appreciate you. I just want to plug my show next week, but first I am going to play a little commercial break, and then I'll be right back.
Of Hill Harper's new book, Letters to a Young Sister, Define Your Destiny, from your local bookstore or on the internet at barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com.
Available at mcclendonreport.com. How to find a good black man. How
Hey, this is Dangerous Lee. When you aren't being upfront and straightforward with my man Alan Roger Curry, you should definitely be keeping it dangerous with me and HP every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern by listening to Ask Dangerously Live right here on Blog Talk Radio. Simply direct your computer to AskDangerously.com for your weekly dose of danger. And if you can't get enough of me on Friday nights, join me at MySpace.com/DangerousLee.
Are you ready for the best morning show with a legal twist? Then tune in every morning to www.blogtalkradio.com/in-the-know from 8 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. for Legal Beat in the Morning with Attorney Anthony Reed. Tune in every morning to ask questions about legal issues, discuss hot topics, and start your day off right. Legal Beat in the Morning with Attorney Anthony Reeves on www.blogtalkradio.com/in-the-know. It's more than a show. It's an experience.
Celebrating 25 years of the countdown.
25 years of the countdown.
With Walt's Baby Love.
Live in our countdown studios, ladies and gentlemen, a personal friend of mine, Mr. Stevie Wonder.
Now live with me on the countdown hotline, it's Justin Timberlake. Live with me in our countdown studios, my friend Tina Marie. Welcome, Tina. On the countdown hotline, live, Eric Benet. As promised, my friend Kirk Franklin. As promised, it's Natalie Cole. As promised, y'all, Kenneth Babyface Edmonds. As promised, John Legend. As promised, live on my countdown hotline, Alan Roger Curry. Welcome, Alan.
The old to the new to the old. The old to the new to the old.
Only for the grown and sexy.
The grown and sexy.
The countdown with Walt Baby Love.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Hey, this is Hill Harper, and you can be the difference in the life of a child. Be big. Volunteer with Big Brothers Big Sisters. Do it today. The kids need us. Go to BigBrothersBigSisters.org.
Can you believe it? If you're an NBA fan, Boston has come back. Oh, my goodness. Boston has come back. Man, they were getting beat by like 20 points. Everybody, one of the announcers said this game is over. I even said it. I'm not going to lie. At the beginning of my show, I said this game is over. Boston came back. So if you're an NBA fan, Boston is now leading. And I want to give a special thanks to someone who was working my chat room. Her name is Kathy Holloway Hill. Kathy Holloway Hill. She was working my chat room tonight. She has a show on Blog Talk Radio entitled Living by Design that comes on every Wednesday. Every Wednesday at around, I think it's 6 o'clock Eastern Time. I might have it wrong, but Kathy Holloway Hill, I want to give her a special shout-out because she was manning my chat room for most of the show because I didn't want to get distracted from my interview with Mr. Hill Harper. Yeah, 6 p.m. Eastern, Kathy Holloway Hill, Living by Design. She has a great show with her co-host Tony Lamont from, if you're from Indiana, you know Tony Lamont from WTLC. He has the voice. The voice, man. So everybody knows Tony Lamont's voice. So Kathy Holloway Hill, Tony Lamont, much love to you. Kathy, I appreciate you, man, in the chat room. Now, you know, I've been getting a lot of emails. I don't know. Some of my listeners and some of the people in the chat room know this. I was featured in the upcoming July edition of Essence Magazine on page 117. So if you're a woman and you get a subscriber to Essence Magazine or you buy it off the newsstand, when you get the July issue, the one with Gabrielle Union on the cover, go to page 117. They're talking about, I think the name of the article is They Thought I'd Never Get Married, and they asked various people for tips to women on finding Mr. Right. And yours truly had a comment or two featured in there. So you'll find Alan Roger Curry's name in Essence Magazine, and I've already gotten about 100 emails from women I know from the East Coast to the West Coast. Alan Roger Curry, what you doing in Essence? What are you doing in Essence? Ain't that something? I open my magazine, and who do I see? Alan Roger Curry in Essence Magazine. Now, I'm really happy about that. I give props to a young lady named Demetria Lucas, who co-wrote the story. She was the one who got in contact with me, and then another editor whose name escapes me at the time got in contact with me, and I gave them a lot of my thoughts, and they used at least a couple of my comments in Essence Magazine. So, Essence Magazine. See, I usually avoid reading Essence Magazine because I think of that as a woman's magazine. And well, it is a woman's magazine. But I'm going to pick up about 15 copies of the July copy of Essence Magazine because I'm in there on page 117, and I'm happy about that. Next week, I will have a very intelligent young lady by the name of Rebecca Brody. Rebecca Brody will be on the show next week. Her site is thelovecoach.com, theluvcoach.com. And what we're going to be talking about is women who cannot seem to resist the charms of men who are notorious womanizers. Women who cannot resist the charms of men who are notorious womanizers. You know who you are. You know who you are. I'm not going to call you out, but you know who you are. Women, see somebody in my chat room say, oh, you got to love those womanizers. Because womanizers, here's the thing, womanizers aren't womanizers for nothing. The reason why a guy is a top-notch player or womanizer is because he either has the looks, he has the charm, he has the sex skills, he has just the overall package that draws women to him, and he ends up having a lot of options. And Carrie Love says, are you a womanizer, Alan? Yes, the weather is great outside, Carrie Love. The weather is great, and I do love chicken wings. I love chicken wings. And the weather is great outside. I love chicken wings. But, no, that's going to be a great show next week with Rebecca Brody. She's going to be with me. We're going to chalk it up about womanizers, players, playboys, all those guys. And we're not so much going to focus on the guys themselves, but we're going to focus more so on why certain women can't resist those guys. why certain women just cannot seem to resist those guys. And we're going to get into some other topics that probably segue from that. Join me again next week. Next week, I have Miss Rebecca Brody. I'll see you.
Testify, come up in the spot looking extra fly, but it's day I die, I'ma touch the sky. Gotta testify, come up in the spot looking extra fly. For the day I die, I'ma touch the sky. Back when they thought pink polos would hurt the rock, before Cam got the shit to pop, the doors were closed. I felt like Bad Boy Street Team, I couldn't walk the lock. Now let's go, take them back to the plan. Me and my mama hopped in that U-Haul van. Any pessimists, I ain't talk to them. Plus I ain't had no phone in my apartment. Let's take them back to the club. At least about an hour I stand online. I just wanted to dance. I went to Jacob an hour after I got my advance. I just wanted to shine. Jake's favorite line, dog, in due time. Now they look at me like, damn, dog, you what I am. A hip-hop legend, I think I died in an accident. Cause this must be heaven. I gotta testify. Come up in the spot looking extra fly. For the day I die, I'ma touch the sky. Gotta testify. Come up in the spot looking extra fly.
Yeah.
For the day I die, I'ma touch the sky. Now let's take some high. Back when Slick Rick got the shit to pop, I'd do anything to say I got it. Damn, them new loafers hurt my pocket. Before anybody wanted K-West beef, me and my girl split the buffet at KFC. Dog, I was having nervous breakdowns. Like, man, these niggas that much better than me. Baby, I'm going on an airplane, and I don't know if I'll be back again. Sure enough, I sent the plane tickets, but when she came to kick it, things she came different. Any girl I cheated on, she cheated on. Couldn't keep it at home, thought I needed a knee alone. I'm trying to right my wrongs, but it's funny them same wrongs help me write the song now. I gotta testify, come up in the spot looking extra fly. For the day you die, you gon' touch the sky. You gon' touch the sky, baby girl, testify. Come up in the spot looking extra fly. For the day you die, you gon' touch the sky. Yes, 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 guess who's on third? Lupe still like looping the third. Here like here till I'm bitter on the curb. Peach buzz buzz but bit on the verge. Let's slow it down like river on the serve. Bottle shaped body like Mrs. Butterworth. But before you say another word, I'm back on the block like I'm laying on the street. I'm trying to stop lying like a mum bra, but I'm not lying when I'm laying on the beat. On guard, a touche, Lupe, cool as the unthaw. But I still feel possessed as a gunshot. Becoming correct as a porn star. And a fresh pair of steps and my best phone call. I represent the first. Now let me end my verse right where the horns are. Like, I gotta testify. Come up in the spot looking extra fly. For the day you die, you gon' touch the sky. You gon' touch the sky, baby girl. Testify. Come up in the spot looking extra fly. For the day you die, you gon' touch the sky.